Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how amazing Toyota axles are, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs. My name is Tyler, Toyota Tyler, and that might be changing to Ford Tyler soon, Lightning Tyler. And joining me in the studio, the Morflate / Snail Trail / Snail Armor / everything else recording studio here in Sacramento, California, for the best 4x4 podcast is the one and only Mr. Jimmy Jett. Mr. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Nice. How was your weekend, man?
Good.
That's good.
Yeah, good weekend.
Yeah.
Good Father's Day.
Good Father's Day?
Yeah. My dad's funny because he...
He's pretty funny.
My mom wants to go and do things, and my dad just wants to stay home and be lazy. Right? And so we were over there, and my dad, my mom's like, so what do we want to do? Like, well, let's go do something. And my dad's like, I want to stay here and watch TV or play on the computer. And my dad loves Reddit.
Reddit.
He's like, I just want to be lazy and stay here and, you know, have lunch and just relax.
Feed me grapes all day.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. And my mom's like, no, let's go on a hike. Let's go on a walk. Let's go. You know, he's like, whose day is this? Yeah, right. So yeah, that was pretty funny. And, what was nice is, I got a Father's Day gift.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A little card and a thank you. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Even though technically, you know, the wedding's this weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not technically a air quote father. Yet. Yeah. You know, I posted.
Did it trigger something in your head though? Like, is that a defining moment in your life, Jimmy?
No, I thought you were gonna say. So, is there something you're not telling us?
Oh.
And you know, no. To no to both of those.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't a shotgun wedding, and Charles Locke said something to me. He wrote on. I posted something on my private Instagram account and a picture of the assistant and the mini assistant and myself when we were up in Tahoe. And Charles Locke said, and I thought it was really, really nice, a great way to say it. He said, there's no such thing as a stepfather. There's only fathers who step up.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And that kind of hit home just with everything going on, you know, and I was like, I see that, you know, it's crazy to, kind of take on that responsibility.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you get the fun years.
No, now. I know. I'm so happy about right? that.
You get to skip all the
I'm
bad
so
years.
I'm so happy about that. Like, I don't need to change diapers. I don't have to deal with the three-year-old. I don't have to, you know, I walked into this situation when the mini assistant was like five, you know? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, and now she's playing soccer, you know, and like we'll go in the backyard and kick the ball back and forth, you know, it's definitely the better years, you know, because we're going to try, I think, to have a kid. I'm kind of like, why don't we just adopt like another 5-year-old?
That's kind of, so it's funny.
I want to just skip those other years.
Funny you say that. The secretary and I are possibly looking at having a kid maybe next year. And I keep trying to tell her, I'm like, hey, can we just adopt a 5-year-old? Like, let's just skip that part. Adopt a 5-year-old. Let's go that way. And then the other part of me that I've started saying now is, hey, once we have it, can we just like give it to somebody for 5 years and then get it back after 5 years?
Yeah, exactly. So, but it was a good weekend. Nice. This was also the last weekend was my friend's anniversary summer solstice camping trip.
Oh, nice.
The one where we go out to Lotus.
Yeah.
Or went out to Lotus.
Mm-hmm. I went out to,
and go so
play on Barking Dog.
Yeah, exactly. Played on Barking Dog. We weren't able to spend a lot of, with everything going on, we only went out there for the night.
Now, don't get too far into it. I was just asking for a general, how was your weekend? Because we still have Thursday's episode. We can talk about details.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, so. That works. So we went out to Lotus, hung out with my friends for their camping trip, which is also their anniversary.
Cool.
They got married on the summer solstice.
Oh, at Lotus or?
At camp, the one across the river. The nicer one.
There's a few camps across the river there.
The one, yeah, the one across the bridge, the main bridge.
Under the bridge, right? Yeah, Troublemaker.
I don't know what the obstacle is right there. And the one that has the cabins that you can rent out.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's right there next to Troublemaker.
So they got married there on summer solstice. And then for their anniversary every year, they have a camping trip where they invite their friends that were at the wedding.
So that's why you're there. Mm-hmm. Nice. Cool. Well, we'll get into some of those shenanigans on Thursday.
Okay.
Let's get into this episode.
Yeah.
Before we get super long winded like we did on last Thursday. Before we do, make sure you guys are checking out the Patreon account. We have the giveaway going on this month. We will announce the winner of Tyler's boxes on the first week of July. So, yeah, we'll announce the winner for that one, and we'll announce next month's giveaway next week.
Sounds good.
So, be looking out for those. Go leave a review on iTunes. We're giving away a winch. If you have not heard yet, and this is the first episode you're listening to, or the fourth episode, some people like to start at like episode 200 and just go from there. I would highly recommend doing it that way. One through 199, terrible episodes. Don't go listen to those.
I'd say go find a few topics that you might be interested in.
Yeah, cherry pick them. No guarantees on our end that they're good. So just FYI. Yeah.
They're probably as good as this one.
Yeah.
So if you enjoy this one,
that's a good way of putting it.
Then you might like the other ones.
Yeah. So we're giving away a winch. So check that out. Once we had 500 reviews on iTunes, we'll pull a winner from those 500 entries, 500 reviews, 500 entries. You can put the math together on that. And I think that about does it. We do have a voicemail, a text message to get through to read. I have a couple of really neat descriptions that Toyota has put out about the new vehicles.
Yeah.
So those are interesting. We'll get a good laugh out of those. I have a couple of rants that I don't think will take too long.
Okay.
And I'm having a midlife crisis, which is the main chunk of today. That's where the campfire discussion is going to happen, right? So
can I just ask about your midlife crisis real quick?
Sure.
Is it that you're having a massive dilemma in your life and you can't decide which way to go between screwball and fireball?
Pretty much. That's part of it. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really hoping people can help me out with this. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about just buying a bottle of screwball, buying a bottle of fireball, and putting them together in a 2-liter bottle and have cinnamon peanut butter whiskey. Yeah.
I almost threw up.
You hear Jimmy in the background, like the never released Tyler episode.
Yeah. Do they have that?
They need to put that on their
Patreon account.
If they don't, we're gonna steal Chris's laptop next.
Yeah.
And take it off of there. We'll put it out on our Patreon account. So anyways, we have a couple voicemails.
Okay, let's do it.
So let me make sure that I'm connected to the board real quick. Oh, I am. Perfect. Go here. Your voicemail. All right, you ready? This is not a number I recognize, but it's a local to Sacramento number. Okay. So here we go.
This message is for Ford Yoda Tyler because he has more Fords than Toyotas. No one really likes the ham radio. Let's be honest. You're making up listeners that love ham radio.
We're done with this one. No, we'll go back to, hopefully it's in the middle there where we'll play the whole thing here. I know who it is.
I do too.
Okay. I don't have that
this
number saved.
This message is for Yoda Tyler because he has more Fords than Toyotas. No one really likes the ham radio. Let's be honest. You're making up listeners that love ham radio. In all seriousness, keep up the good work, guys. And yes, we all like Jimmy better.
I agree with that. Thanks, Corey.
I disagree. That's one of the worst voicemails we've ever gotten.
Every point he said, I 100% agree with.
Bummer.
I think you could change yours to 4 Ford Toyota.
4X Ford Yoda.
4X Ford Yoda.
4X Ford Yoda Tyler.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I might have to as well. I'm seriously, seriously considering getting the F-150 Lightning.
Dude, those things are rad.
My My only concern is that as Morphlate becomes more and more serious and I'm able to put more and more time and effort into it, I need to have a rig that I can tow Kermit or the Bronco out to an event with across country if I need to.
Right.
And you just, I don't have enough trust in the charging stations outside of California.
Nope, I wouldn't.
Inside California, there's a shit ton of charging stations.
Yeah, but it still slows the whole thing down, your whole trip and everything. You know, you got to sit at a place for like an hour.
If you think about it, our trip to Moab was 15 and a half hours that first day when going there. We stopped roughly about every 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Which at a, towing, I don't know what the range would be, but...
We went about at 400 miles. We
went that's true, because we were going off of my gas tank.
Yeah, 400 miles, and we would stop and fill up.
Yep. So we'd stopped and fill up, and, you know, we stopped, you know, three times for food throughout the day. Each food stop was about 30 to 40 minutes. So that's about the right cadence of a battery setup.
Right.
It's just finding the charging stations.
Well, that and instead of just filling up the gas tank and going, now you're, you know, having to wait.
You just essentially time your food. Fuel charges with your food stops.
Right.
Absolutely. And it's like, yeah, when you're towing cross country, that's a, that's the thing that I'm worried about.
A Ford is a great, the Ford Lightning is, would be an awesome tool for the more local work that needs to get done. But if you got to drive across country, I don't think it's going to be the solution.
And that's kind of like, if I build the Bronco.
I also don't, I mean, the towing capacity is probably pretty good, but, I'd be,
my is F1, it the my same? F-150 has a higher towing capacity than the Lightning does.
Right.
Yeah. Because of the solid axle in the rear, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, I'm thinking if I go with the Lightning, then I'll just take the Bronco and I won't have a tow rig. We'll just set up the Bronco for overlanding long distance trips and use the Bronco for that.
Exactly.
So. But anyways, that's not the midlife crisis.
That's not the discussion today.
No, I was just like, I really, really like that F1 Lightning.
It's really nice. Did you watch that Marquise video? I should send it to you.
You need to send it to me. I want to watch it.
It's like he does a good job at talking about all the different features and functions and talking about, and we talked about it before, but talking about how the mileage was with a payload.
Yeah.
And how if it's unloaded, it can do better. So
yeah, I have been watching Adventure Overland, I think, on Instagram, has a bunch of Bronco videos. They got signed up for the off-rodeos. That Bronco, that Ford's doing for the Bronco releases. And so they've been doing a shit ton of video content on the Broncos at these off rodeos.
Okay.
And I'm just like, I'm watching these videos and I'm like, it's all like areas like Rock Creek OHV. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is not showing off the capabilities of the Bronco at all.
Yeah.
I'm like, I would not pay $500 per event to go and drive around forest roads.
Right.
So
did you see the picture of the Jeep pulling the Bronco out?
I did see that one. Yeah.
Did nobody else notice that is not the Bronco?
I didn't.
It's the Bronco Sport.
Oh, well, yeah. I noticed it was a Bronco Sport.
Which is not the Bronco.
No, it's not the Bronco that's being advertised as the off-road vehicle. Yeah.
And so all these Jeep people. That's the street vehicle. Yes. All these Jeep people are like, the Jeep's pulling the Bronco out. I'm like, it's not a Bronco. That's a Ford Explorer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's a Ford Explorer. And the Jeep that was pulling them out was like on 37s and bigger axles and wider full widths. And I was like, yeah, there's no
comparison. You know, you're pulling out an SUV.
Yeah.
You know, you're pulling out a Ford Explorer or like a, you know, whatever else there is.
A late 80s.
Pontiac and Zed. What's that Pontiac one? I can't remember that.
A late 80s Previa can probably do better than a Bronco Sport.
Yes.
In the off-roading.
Yes.
So.
Definitely.
Anyways.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on. So there's that. We have a text message that came through.
Cool.
On the Snail Trail Google number.
What is that number again?
916-345-4744.
Awesome. Thank you.
And this text message got me really excited.
Oh.
Did it come to your phone at all?
No,
I guess not.
I don't think so.
Doesn't have your phone.
I don't have it. Yeah.
But it came from APRS.
Oh.
It was an APRS text message.
So Matt sent it?
It was mainly FZJ80.
Oh, okay.
Our main version of Lee.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So he sent it in. It's a K1FZJ. 9. It says APRS SSID on it. It says, hey, Tyler and Jimmy from Maine, keep crawling 73s, K1FZJ.
Cool.
Yeah. So I thought that That's was super fun. Cool. I responded back with nice APRS for the win, K6TLR. And so he never responded back. So I'm curious to see if he got that.
Yeah.
I'll have to hit him up on Instagram.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's fun. We figured that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We called him out and told him to do it. And then he did it. It was cool. So that got me really excited when he came through. I was like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Getting all giddy. Let's see. What else do we have? I have a little list here. The truck descriptions. I gotta lay these out because they are.
Oh, the new Tacoma.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was ridiculous.
It reminds me of some of the wine and whiskey descriptions that our sister podcast reads.
Yeah, they were embarrassing.
Oh, there's
don't read them.
I gotta read them.
No, don't do it.
To read these.
Come on, it's just gonna make us bad.
I know. That's great.
All of our Jeep listeners, all 50% of our listeners are gonna be like laughing.
Since when have we cared about how people view us, Jimmy, on the podcast?
Since never. But
so anyways,
just know that this isn't our descriptions. No. This is Toyota's.
Yes. So anyways, this was for the new 4Runner TRD Sport. Okay. This is Toyota's description that they put out on social media. It says, stake any claim the all-new 2022 4Runner TRD Sport is ready to take on national parks and urban parking structures.
Seriously?
Okay. It features stunning standard chrome-colored 20-inch alloy wheels, X-Riaz Sport Enhancement Suspension, and a Softex trimmed interior with gray contrast stitching.
Wow.
You magnificent bastard. I salute you.
Good job, Toyota.
Yeah. Take on those state parks and urban structures your gray stitching.
I just can't believe the urban structures.
Yeah.
They threw in urban structures.
You can handle them all.
You can handle those parking structures.
Yeah. You can drive over the curb.
So this next one is great as well. There's a couple of the things in here that I'm like,
which one really? Is this still the 4Runner?
This is the Tacoma.
Okay. The new Tacoma.
The new Tacoma. A rock off road. We need to get Dirtbag Johnny to read these.
Just rock off road.
Rock off road. Make molehills out of mountains. Check out the 2022 Tacoma TRD Pro with standard 1.5-inch front and 1/2-inch rear suspension lift. And machine forged upper control arm, plus an enhanced tire sidewall appearance. Check it out now.
Oakley dokley.
This is so pathetic.
It's pathetic. I just
is that the TRD Pro?
That's a TRD
Pro. TRD Pro.
TRD Pro.
You get a 1.5-inch lift in the front, 1/2-inch in the rear.
Yep.
So to their credit, the front end on stock ones is roughly 1 inch lower than the rear. So what they did is they did a 1 inch lift or a 1/2-inch lift and leveled it.
They did a 1/2-inch level lift.
Yeah.
Yes. To their credit, though, they did mention their machine forged upper control arms.
Yes, they did, which are interesting.
I really want to know how those work out.
I do. We were talking about them the other day, mm-hmm. and because Poly Performance just came out with some really cool upper control arms that are non-greasable. Mm-hmm. You don't need to grease them. And they'd be great, outstanding for the everyday driver that will take their rig off-road occasionally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and for those, I think we talked about it a little while ago, that I just did the 3-inch spacer lift on Charlotte, mm-hmm. just to get the content in there. And I'm going to do a lift here soon. But they were able to get the toe of the alignment in, but none of the caster and camber or anything else is correct.
Oh, geez.
So I thought about buying the Toyota upper control arms and throwing it on to my rig and then going having it aligned and seeing if they could align it with those upper control arms for a 3-inch lift, because they probably designed the arms for the 1.5-inch lift, but to see if it fixes a 3-inch lift kit to just to show everybody or talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they're probably like a grand.
They're probably more than that, knowing Toyota dealers.
Yeah.
So the kicker to this for me was it's the TRD Pro, which is the top of the line Tacoma, right? Mm-hmm. And it's an enhanced tire sidewall appearance.
Right.
So it's not really an enhanced sidewall.
No.
It just looks rugged.
Right.
But it's not really rugged. That's what they're saying.
So they worked with a tire manufacturer that added something on the side of their tire?
That's what I'm guessing, yeah.
Jeez. I'm going to buy a Jeep.
Oh, but whoa. T-shirt.
Never mind.
There's a T-shirt.
I'm just embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed, too. I'm like, I seriously feel like I'm reading a wine label. Mm-hmm. On these, I'm like, this is embarrassing.
I mean,
what are you doing?
How many episodes have we talked about where Toyota's coming out with something and just totally failed?
Yeah, right.
At least failed in our world, right?
Yes.
I mean, I think that the everyday consumer, somebody like in LA or the Bay Area that, you know, wants to just, I want to be able to buy this truck and put 33s on it and have the enhanced.
I want it to look rugged.
I want it to look rugged while I drive around, you know, up the hills in San Francisco.
Or while I sit in the Bay Bridge parking
lot. The Bay Bridge parking lot. Yeah. I want people to look over and go, yeah, nice truck. Right. Thumbs up. You know, then that might be their target audience. But for, you know, you and I who want to a truck that I can buy and throw like 37s on and take it out wheeling on some pretty gnarly terrain, they're failing.
Big time failing. So I laughed harder than I'm laughing right now at these descriptions. When I first saw them come up, I was like, wow, that's so bad. So bad. So anyways, I wanted to share that with everybody.
Yeah. I hope you all are laughing along with us.
Oh, I hope so too.
Or crying with me.
Right. man. However, the new Land Cruiser was announced.
I didn't see that.
Oh my God. Yes. It's announced
for America.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. It's announced for everywhere in the world. As Charles Lockwood put it, if you like to hear about all the Toyotas you don't get in the United States, right?
All the great vehicles that aren't allowed.
Yeah.
Or produced here.
That new Land Cruiser.
Is it a 300 series?
I didn't check the series model on it, but the engine stats on it for something that Toyota is putting out, that's getting 405 horsepower and like 450, 460 foot-pounds of torque.
Wow.
And the new Land Cruiser, and it's twin turbocharged.
Yeah, so they didn't bring it into the United States because it wouldn't pass smog.
Probably. That'd be my guess. So anyways, we'll see. I'm going to keep a close eye on that Land Cruiser. I like the front end look of kind of the more sporty looking model of it. Okay. I like the way it looks in the front. It reminds me a little bit of a Ford Explorer, though, when I'm looking at it and comparing like the front end of a Ford Explorer. But I'm really curious. I'm going to keep a close eye on it and see what the final specs of that vehicle looks like for the United States model if it gets brought into the United States.
Cool.
So anyways, that's the news updates there.
Okay.
I have a couple of rants
ready.
So, the first one is Starbucks.
Okay.
So I hate the new Starbucks lids. They're not conducive for driving in a vehicle.
No, they're not.
And, I've bitched.
What do you hate about them?
So when you're in a vehicle, you typically, things are going to slosh around in a vehicle, right? In your cups. The hole there is conducive for kind of walking around, holding your cup and drinking out of it directly out of the cup, because it's not really a hole that you can put a straw in. It's a big, long, oval hole there, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so if you have a straw in there, it's still going to slosh around and everything's going to come out of the cup as you're driving around. And I've bitched and complained to people at the baristas and managers. I'm like, look, I get it. I'm a business owner. I want feedback when something sucks. So I'm giving you my feedback too. You guys probably don't care. You're not going to do anything with it, but I'm going to still do my due diligence, be a Karen, and give you guys my feedback. These lids suck. And I'm going to stop ordering and coming here and going to Starbucks if I can't get lids that are conducive for me to have my drink in my car. And I think that you're pissing off a lot of customers by not letting people have drinks in their cars, essentially.
Sure.
So I've been complaining about it, and I got in my car, in the F-150, I was climbing in a couple weeks ago, and I bumped like the steering wheel and my arm hit something on my way in, and I spilled a good amount of my drink all over my front seat and my floor and my center console because it came out of that stupid hole in the lid. And so I went back in and I was like, do you guys have any other lids, like anything at all? And they're like, no. And I was like, I need something to put a stopper in this to keep it from spilling then. And they're like, oh, we're out of stoppers too. And I was like, well, I just spilled my drink in my car. Can you pay for my cleaning service now? And they're like, no, we're not going to do that. And I was like, okay, then this is stupid. This is useless. But now I was like, whatever, I'll deal with it. You can fold a straw in half and kind of shove it in that hole, and it takes up most of the hole.
Okay.
But now, whenever I ask for straws, I went in today, and they gave me that piece of shit.
The paper straws.
Paper straws.
Yep.
So if they are officially now moving over to paper straws, I'm not going to be going there anymore. So. No.
I think this is a stupid California thing.
It is a stupid No, they do it in New York too. When I go to New York once a year during normal years, all of New York straws are also paper straws. Mm. And they just disintegrate. And like with my coffees, I like to sip my coffee throughout the day, and the straw just disintegrates into my coffee throughout the day. And I'm like, this is stupid.
Can I play devil's advocate?
No.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
This is your rant. No, I mean, I can let it be.
No, go ahead.
Absolutely. And you didn't drop an F-bomb, so I don't know if it's really considered a rant.
Fucking straws.
Thank you. So I'm looking at you here, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
And you have your Starbucks coffee with the stupid lid.
Uh-huh.
You got a reusable Starbucks mug to your left, which has a straw in it and a lid that seals.
A good lid and a good hard straw. Plastic straw that's not going to disintegrate on me.
I know you put water and ice in there, but why didn't you just pour that out and put your coffee in there?
Because I'm at the warehouse today and I need drinkable water. The water here isn't fantastic. And I'm going to be staying at the warehouse here pretty much all day and up to like 9 p.m. probably.
But why didn't you go to Starbucks and order a water?
Because I would still get a straw.
I know, but you know that I was going to spill water. If you spilled water in your car, you wouldn't be as pissed.
That's true. Would they put my drink in there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? They would make my drink and
yeah, you okay. Give them that and they would make your drink in it.
Yeah. Okay.
And now you have a straw and the proper lid.
Okay. I'll have to think about that one then.
And then maybe bring one of those little like 1 gallon igloo cooler things for your water.
Yeah.
Well, or do it at your house or whatever, but
okay.
And I got another solution for you.
Okay.
Dutch Bros is about to open tomorrow.
Well, that was my original plan. It was to go to Dutch Bros, and we already talked about that, I think, on the last
episode. They do the stupid lids too.
Yeah. But at least they don't have paper straws yet.
You have less distance to drive to spill your drink.
Yes, exactly.
Anyways, you got, sorry. I know I ruined your rant, but you got another one for us?
So the next one is, I get the whole movement of people modifying their vehicles for the look of a vehicle rather than function of a vehicle.
Spinner wheels.
Spinner wheels. Exactly. That's a great one. I'm like, cool. I get it. You want to take, a Lamborghini and make it look better and just dump them on a bunch of money into it, even though they're already functional.
I saw a Mazda Miata driving down the road right over here.
Uh huh.
And it had a tie dye paint job.
That's awesome.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
That was crazy. It was probably a wrap, let's be honest. But it was still, I was like, I would not have spent the money on that.
Yeah, right. But like to each their own, you know, you want to, if you like the way something looks and you want to modify a vehicle for looks like Toyota's doing right now with their sidewall appearance, rugged appearance tires, you go for it. It's not my thing, not my big. I don't give a crap how my vehicles look. And if you look at Kermit, you can, there's a testament to that there. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at how people don't understand physics. So here's what I'm going to get to. People that put in undercarriage lighting, aka rock lights, as you know, like a glow light, right? And they put the lights into their fender wells because they want their vehicle to glow at nighttime, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, cool. If that's what you want to do.
Which is illegal in California, by the way.
It's illegal in California on the road, absolutely. But
and especially any lights that are blue and red are illegal.
Yes.
Just in California, at least.
Yeah.
Because they have the air quotes mimicking a peace officer. So.
Yep.
All right. Go on.
Geek Squad had to change their cars. The paint job on their cars at one point because they looked too much like a peace officer car with the black and white design. Oh, anyways,
didn't know that.
Yeah. But anyway, so there's been a few people on Instagram I've messaged because they put on rock lights on their car and then they put them up in the fender wells and their tires cast these massive shadows and you can't see anything outside of the edge of the vehicle. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, Why did you put rock lights?
Cool, dude.
I was like, that's cool. Why'd you put rock lights on your car when you can't use them for rocks? And he goes, the most common response I get is, oh, I just like the look of it. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's you. Perfect. Mm-hmm. There was somebody that posted a review of rock lights in one of the off-road groups on Facebook and said, these rock lights are pretty much terrible. I would not, I'm going to uninstall them. I would not recommend them. They cast shadows everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you have your rock lights in your fucking wheel wells, like up in your fender wells.
Yeah.
And then, and then there was a bunch of people like, well, yeah, if you put them in different places, they work a lot better. And I just put, stop putting rock lights in fender wells.
Right.
And so that's my rant, is people who put rock lights in fender wells and expect them to work.
Sure.
I'm like, I'm amazed at how many people don't understand how light works. Mm-hmm. So that's my rant. Stop putting your fucking rock lights in fender wells, people.
I posted a photo, and I'm sorry if you're a listener and I'm going to say this about you, but I posted a photo of the rock lights under Bobcat lit up at night. Uh-huh. And I said, these things, like, I'm really happy with the layout on them. They cast a good amount of light. I think this is rad. I think the little angle iron welded things that we created are a great solution. This is cool. I'm happy with this.
Yeah.
And the person commented, it looks like you have a big shadow underneath your rig.
Well, right? Yeah.
I'm like, and to me, I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. Like underneath my rig is not usually the problem at night. Usually the issue is why are my tires going? Where am I going to get the traction? I need light in front and rear of my tires, not directly underneath the center of my rig. Like if you're getting stuck and you're hung up, then maybe, yeah, you need to see what's going on there. But for it to drive around to see where your tires are going and people outside your rig to see where your tires are going, you need light for the tires
outside of the rig. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Not underneath the center of your rig.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it does cast a shadow and mine are angled outwards from the frame that is shooting away from the rig. So I understand that it's not lighting underneath my rig, but to me, it was like, I don't really think I need light in that location. You know,
the only time you need light under your rig is if you need to work on your rig at nighttime.
Sure.
In which case, that's what magnetic LED flashlights are for, in my opinion.
Yeah, or another flashlight that you just set to point up.
Yeah.
So I have used the rock lights to work on the rig at night, and they do, like, it's shadowed in that location, but there's still light.
There's still ambient lighting. Yeah. So anyways, those are my two rants.
Nice. I think it is funny how people if there's installer errors where people are arguing that the product sucks, I mean, you know, and it's obvious that it's the person that sucks, not the product that sucks.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about that more off air, but,
and what did I do?
No, not you. Oh. It's somebody else.
I do have a video of me. So I watched this video of Chris Fix and doing window repair. Mm-hmm. And he used this product and it worked and he showed it working really good. So I bought that product and I used it on Lloyd, my old truck Lloyd. Uh-huh. And it didn't work well at all.
Yeah.
Right. And I followed the instructions and I watched his video to see how he did it before I did it. And I did everything that they said. And I was like, no, this product did not work for me. Like it seems to work for other people. It has good reviews, but I messed up or this product didn't work for me. And everybody was like, did you put it in sunlight? Did you let it dry hard and long enough? Did you do all these other things? I'm like, I did everything that it says to do and I still have a crack in my window. It didn't solve that. And I think I said in the video, the only thing I think of is that like it's just a crack in a, you know, in a little chip, and it is too small or too tight for it to solve the problem.
Gotcha.
You know, but it's funny because, you know, I have people harassing me that I did it wrong.
Yeah.
Which I might have, I'll be honest.
Or just the wrong application.
Or the wrong application. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I've been on the flip side of this coin as well. So.
Yep. So, yeah, those are, I think,
those are two rants.
My two rants and the updates with Toyota.
Yep.
The descriptions.
Okay.
The voicemail and the text from mainly FZ.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk about Fireball and Screwball.
Yes. I'm thinking about kind of adding almost like a 2 liter bottle, like mixing them in a 2 liter bottle and then hanging it from my ceiling with a hose that comes down with a nozzle on it. Kind of like
a beer bong.
Yeah. Like a beer bong works. Yeah. And that way, while I'm just going down the trail, you can just have a little sip and you're good to go.
Nice.
So,
in my infinite wisdom a while ago, I put, I can't remember what it was. I think it was Jack and Coke. I added Jack and Coke into a Camel Pack.
Okay.
Or into a bladder, right? Mm-hmm. Adding water into that afterwards never tasted the same. So just be wary if I then dedicated that bladder to only being the bladder that had alcohol in it.
Yeah.
And got another bladder that had whenever I needed water. So the bladders will absorb some of the flavors if you go down that hole.
No, that's not my midlife crisis here, Jimmy.
Okay, what's your midlife crisis?
My midlife crisis is my axles and suspension for Kermit. So
why? What?
So after the last trip on the Rubicon, the rig did great. It did everything I wanted it to. Plus then some, it did some things. I was like, I'm not going to be able to get through this. I'm gonna have to winch out of here. And, it did just fine. With it working so well the way it is, do I really need to spend money? And this is what the topic is, what's that point of, spending your money and getting the value out of it? Like you get diminishing returns at some point where, you know, you want another quarter inch of articulation on your suspension, you need to spend $5,000-$7,000 more to get that quarter of an inch, right?
I might be worth it.
You might
that quarter inch, you know.
I know, right? Quarter inch, story of my life.
I might get to three quarters.
So I think that's going to be kind of the topic. The theme of today is at what point is it worth it? budget wise. Is it better to be budget conscious on planning out upgrades for your vehicle, or do you just kind of go with it and hope that it all works out and spend $10,000 not having kind of pre-tested stuff and you just kind of like, oh, I hope it works out. And then you get there. And what if it doesn't work out? Are you wasted $10,000 or is there a way to incrementally do it or how's it going to go?
I don't know. You know, those are all great questions. I think that, it kind of comes down to what do you want your rig to do?
Mm-hmm.
What is the goal of your rig?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are you going to be, do you want to conquer Windchill 3?
Not without a cage. I think eventually maybe, but I definitely want to have a cage on there first before I try and go do Windchill 3.
Sure. But I mean, and then at that point it might be like, okay, then you need to change suspensions, you know?
Yeah.
But your rig can do Ford Ice Trail, but it might have to do the bypass around Windchill 3, right? And then you can do almost everything, or practically you could do everything else on that trail, including Windchill 1, which is pretty gnarly.
And 5.
Both of them. You know, and you can go up the hard line on 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so really, I think what it comes down to is what am I trying to say here? It's how big of balls do you want to have?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good question.
Do you want to be able to do every hard line and have it and prove that you can do it? Or are you okay with going around things?
Yeah. And I think with Kermit for now, I'm perfectly okay with going around stuff. Cause like right now my wheeling style is not to go down to a trail to play on an obstacle and then go home.
Right.
Like my goal for doing trails is to get to a location, get out at camp, hang out around a campfire, hang out with people, go swimming, do activities at the campsite. But I want to use gnarly trails to get there.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
For that, Kermit works awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really surprising to me because I didn't think I got as much articulation as I do. I knew I got quite a bit, but somebody took a picture of me coming through one of those V-notch areas right before Buck Island that I always mess up. I can never stay up on the wall. I always slide off one way or the other.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
And then
about.
I just drag my slider the whole way down, right?
Right.
And this time...
I just put my... If it's the spot I'm thinking of, so it's like right after where Old Sluice and Old Sluice and Indian Trail combined, mm-hmm. and then there's this like V notch.
Yep,
I just put one side up on the high side and just drive all leave it high and just drive the whole thing at an angle.
So you just So that's what I would try to straddle it, and then I end up inevitably like that every time.
So I just start like that.
Okay.
I don't even try to straddle it.
So what I did this time was I was like, I really want to try and straddle this. I've come down to the Rubicon a lot of times. I've done this V-notch a lot of times. I've never been able to do it. This is the one obstacle I've never been able to do the way I want to do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to hit it this time. And I hit it. I nailed it where I was able to straddle. And really what ended up happening was my front end driver was up on the wall on the left and my rear end passenger was up on the wall on the right. And I was kind of, I don't want to say crab walking down there, but like my rear driver was down in the crevice.
You're crossed up.
I was crossed up big time. And I didn't realize how much that got me crossed over. I felt really level inside the cab. I was like, this feels great. I thought that I was straddling it and I wasn't. I was really crossed over and I was like, wow, I didn't realize Kermit had that much articulation when I looked at the picture afterwards, which is the one I posted on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, fuck, if I have this much articulation on leaf springs, I mean, is it really worth spending, you know, going to new axles and links and coilovers and spending all that money to get maybe another inch out of it?
I think knowing how much more articulation you would get is sort of an unknown.
It is. Absolutely.
Right. 'Cause
three links, you can almost, I mean, if you build a three link, for it, you can almost articulate it all the way completely vertical. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point, like if your axle is vertical, that's, you don't need that much articulation. So, so I'm kind of like, at what point do I need more articulation? Kermit works great for what I do now. I mean, mm-hmm. what would be, and so I kind of put out the question, what's the benefits of going to links over what I'm running now? And a lot of people said comfort.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the articulation is a lot better. Hmm. It's less stress on single components when you're linked. Whereas like on leaf springs, all your stress is on that center pin and your U-bolts, right?
Kind of, yeah.
And so
the center pin's primarily there to hold the leaf back together. Mm-hmm. But since you're twisting it up, it's really stressing that out.
Yeah. And so like the load of the load and forces during articulation are spread out along amongst more components in a link system. Coilovers, they absorb impact a lot better and rebound a lot better if you can tune them a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, yeah, I get it. And it would be a softer ride, but I'm like on my IROX, my balloon tires, soft sidewall, they're C-rated tires. You know, I air those things down to 3 PSI and it's like being on air suspension. I was like, I don't feel like I have a rough ride with my IROX.
Right.
And so then I was like, so if I'm looking to get a softer ride, $10,000 isn't worth it to me, softer ride. So I'm like, that's out the door.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use that reasoning. So somebody else said axle wrap. And I said, that's a really good thing. You get a lot more axle wrap on leaf springs
mm-hmm.
than you do on a linked setup.
Sure.
But I could add an anti-wrap bar.
Mm-hmm.
Just like our good buddy Justin Reese does.
Yep.
And that will almost eliminate my axle wrap issues that I'm having right now. Because I do know I'm getting a lot of axle wrap, and that has been one thing that's really been bugging me.
That's your lunging.
That's my lunging, exactly. And so I'm like, man, I could just add an anti-wrap bar for
$200 and I'm good to go.
Right.
So I'm like, it's not, fixing the axle wrap isn't worth $10,000 to me.
Nope.
So that's out the question. That's out the door. And so there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of reasons people said, some people had said, fuck it. If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I resonate with that a lot.
Yep.
I'm pretty cheap. That's why I drive Toyotas. Right. And so I'm like, that resonates with me a lot. So I'm like, I'm like going back and forth after that trip. I'm like, I like the simplicity of leaf springs.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to repair a leaf spring issue on the trail. Leaf spring suspension issue. There's less components to go wrong, but unless the leaf spring breaks, but then you just pull a John Allen and reforge them in the middle of the trail.
Right. <so. laughs> And we could do that as long as John Allen's around, but then it'll probably be raining on you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I was like, man, I don't know if it's really worth it. And then, somebody said something and they said, honestly, if it were me, I would do it. But just because the knowledge of knowing that you took on a project that you've never done before and you completed start to finish, and then you get to go out and wheel it and know that you're having the success you're having, mm-hmm. and how it feels afterwards, the improvements afterwards, knowing that you did all of it, that's where the $10,000 value comes in. And I'm like, okay, that I resonate with.
Sure.
I'm like, okay, I could see myself doing it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. That's in a way one of the major reasons I'm three linking Samantha, because I've never done that process and I want to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm three linking Samantha because one of the major reasons is to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like that. Really, I like that reason. That's one of the, that's like the, out of everything, there was a bunch of comments that came through and I was like, that's the one.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm down for that. But then my problem becomes time.
Sure.
I just don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, man, I would absolutely love to do that, but I don't think I have the time to do it.
No.
And I'm really bummed out about that. And so I'm like, okay, so I got to find another reason to do this, another valuable point. And of all people, to give some more good ideas that kind of I forgot about for a little bit here, was Sherpa.
Really?
Yeah. That guy can have some
good ideas. Is there more than one Sherpa?
No, there's only one that I know of. Yeah.
Wow.
He commented,
I didn't know he was wise.
I didn't either. But he commented the biggest thing that he noticed from taking his Barbie Jeep from leaf springs to a linked suspension was how much the suspension no longer unloaded on climbs. And I was like, bingo. That is the biggest issue I have right now that I can't fix. That's a component of leaf springs.
You can do a suck down winch.
I could do a suck down winch, but then you lose your suspension. You lose the ability, you lose some of the ability of your suspension to articulate and do all that when you start taking away space.
Kind of. I mean, you lose some of your up travel.
Mm-hmm.
But if you suck down to the center, you still can twist and turn off of the sides.
I guess you would still get down travel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big thing I'm struggling with articulation and severely bump stopping Kermit the way I have.
I'm just trying to ruin your idea. That's all. Yeah. I'm
okay. Thank you. So anyways,
cause I don't think you need to,
you don't think I need to.
Mm-mm.
There's been a lot of times when I'm getting into a pretty gnarly climb and getting into a pretty vertical up position. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable because I can feel the light end get really light.
Yes.
But I haven't ever been in a linked suspension in the same kind of situation.
Sure.
So I don't know what it feels like to be in a linked suspension and see if the front end, how quickly the front end gets light.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to, I mean, we've talked about this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about overbuilding your rig for the trails that you wheel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And right now your rig is like 98% good on every trail that you've been on.
Mm-hmm.
you know, minus some of the Moab things, which is something, it's a unique, different type of wheeling that we don't normally do. That's like, you know, and then I think the only trail out here that has a really difficult spot is Windchill 3 that, you know, that is a normal trail that we would conquer or go and attack, right? We don't go down to Johnson Valley that often. We don't have to deal with some of those things. Bear Valley, I haven't even wheeled before. I don't even know if what the difficult trails are out there.
Big Bear, you mean?
Yeah, Big Bear. Thank you. You know, and so, you know, and I think I'm told in Moab, the hardest trail out there is Pritchett Canyon. And I think your rig can do Pritchett Canyon.
I think I could do Pritchett Canyon too. I know that there's a pretty gnarly climb at the end that I would be really worried about.
Yeah.
But like the hill on Cane Creek, the ledge that you went up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't try that because I feel like Kermit's front end unloads too quickly. And so whenever I get into a situation where I need to bump it, I don't feel safe and confident about bumping it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so I think, you know, to me, a lot of it comes down to building the rig for what you want to do. Right. And so if you want to start tackling harder obstacles and ones that are now making your front end light, then yeah, maybe you need to start modifying your vehicle in that direction to be able to go and do those things. But if your concern is to have a link suspension so that you have an easier ride to get through Barrett Lake, how much is $10,000 worth doing that? You know, and let's just throw it out there that $10,000 is just a number that we're throwing out.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there, yeah.
That you could probably build, like you can build a four link suspension probably for less than that for your front end, with the axle that you're running, you know, for cheaper than 10 grand.
Yes. It's the coil. The coilovers are the main cost.
Yeah, we're just saying 10 grand.
Yeah.
So, but do you need a four link suspension to run through Barrett? No, because you can do it. So, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to is building your rig for the type of wheeling that you want to do. And, you know, and I think that your rig can do almost all the wheeling that you want to do. So really it comes down to like, do you want to change your rig over to tackle these new, more difficult obstacles?
That's a good question. Because my whole thing is I hate dealing with trailer logistics. So I don't want to trailer my rig to trails as much as possible. And I want to be able to drive to any trail I want to drive to, run the trail, and drive home without having to worry about anything breaking. And that's, in order to do that, you end up doing a lot of maintenance time at home and making sure parts are good for each trip and everything's good to go. But I want to be able to do that and not have to worry about using my AAA towing package, whatever.
I'll use it.
Thank you. I'm gonna say, I got to reserve it for you. So that's kind of like, and I know a link suspension is way stronger. It's way stronger than a leaf spring setup. A linked suspension would give me better handling capabilities on the road. I'd get a lot less body roll set up properly with proper sway bars. Driving to and from the trail, and really somebody else was like, yeah, link suspension, you can go faster on the trail. And I'm like, I mean, I can get to camp quicker, but like, and sometimes like if I do, and we're just kind of having fun, I'd like to see how fast I can do a trail, but I'm not going to, once I do it fast, I'm like, I'm not going to try and continually beat my time on that.
Like, what did we do, Barrett in?
3 hours, 3:15, something like that.
Yeah. And I think that if you had a link suspension, you could do it in like two and a half,
maybe. Yeah.
You know, probably faster if you're really trying, you know, and we probably could have gone faster if we were really trying, you know, but
you're not enjoying.
Yeah. You're missing out on the trail and you're missing, like, is it really like, okay, maybe if you have a link suspension, you don't care about that one rock that you have to, you know, that you're going to drive over. Cause it's not as significant as if you're in a leaf sprung, you know, rig. But I mean, yeah, now you're to the point of like, is going faster down the trail the goal of your wheeling style?
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. So I'm kind of like, you know, having a more comfortable ride, which I already think Kermit's fairly for leaf springs. I think Kermit's pretty damn comfy. But you know, the secretaries one is liking getting into riding along, becoming a passenger and coming on these trips more often. And I know that, you know, by the time we got down to the bottom of Big Sluice, she was kind of done mm-hmm. for the day. And I think everybody gets to that point.
Yeah.
At that, right at the bottom of Big Sluice, everyone's done for the day.
Sure.
But like,
and if, then you got another rocky obstacle.
You got another little rocky obstacle to get through.
Right before the bridge.
Yeah. And so if I can make the rig more comfortable for her to come along on trips more, mm-hmm. That might be worth some of the value yeah. of redoing the suspension.
I know the assistants in that boat, mm-hmm. especially, I mean, she's got hashtag buggy life on her mind, you know?
Right. So I don't know there. That's part of my issue. My thing is, you know, do I really need to redo the suspension? I've come to the conclusion that I need to redo the axles.
Okay. I was going to go there. Mm-hmm. Because I think in my head, this makes sense, and I don't know if it's true, but if you widen your axles, you'll gain more articulation.
I'll gain more articulation and stability for off-camber mm-hmm. stuff. Absolutely.
You won't gain the, you might gain some of your, no, you wouldn't gain the unloading issue going up the hill.
No. I could stretch them a little bit more, get different leaf packs or move around the leaf spring hangers. Mm-hmm. And I
you
could
can't really move the leaves out more though. I mean, you can, but you'd have to outboard them on your frame.
Yeah. Well, no, I would move them front and backwards. So I would elongate the wheelbase.
Right.
And but that I'm would saying, give me more stability on climbs.
Yes.
So,
but I was saying but you would lose a little bit of stability because your springs, I think are going to be further in than where your wheels are. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, I guess so. That's maybe
I don't have a good analogy. The only thing I can kind of think of is those stupid little like round things that have a board that you stand on. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? So it's that like round cylinder and then you put the board on top and you can kind of
balance
board it style. Well, if you brought your feet into the center, it's a lot harder to balance than if you had your feet out wide.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't know though, because if your springs are in the same area, mm-hmm. then it, in theory, it should feel the same. Yeah, I'm not maybe. Sure, but that's if you question. Put it wider, you would feel more,
you'd
much
get a
more
lot
stable.
Less yeah, a lot less body roll out of it.
Yeah,
that's true.
But that's mm-hmm. another hurdle. Now you've got to outboard your springs off your frame to make that happen.
Gotcha.
Whereas if you just leave it the same, you know, you probably are going to be more stable just because your tires will be out a little bit, but you might get more body roll. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. That's my suspension dilemma.
Yeah. And
you
know, my two cents right
yeah,
now.
I do.
Think. I don't think it's necessary. I think you'll be fine. I don't, you know, it's a matter of what's next. You're going to be getting the Bronco possibly soon. And then, I mean, how much, if the secretary is going out on crazy trips, really, I think you're going to be going in the Bronco.
And, not on crazy trips.
Well, not crazy, crazy trips. Yeah. But I think, you know, there's a lot of 50% of the time you're going to be in the Bronco and smooth ride. And then mm-hmm. occasionally you're going to be going the other 50%. You're probably going in Kermit for, mm-hmm. You know, down some of the more gnarly trails. Mm-hmm. And I think Kermit does good with almost all the trails that we do out here. Mm-hmm. And I want the coilovers that are in my shop.
Yeah, because that's the other part of it. I already have the coilovers, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's doing a link suspension is not going to cost me a lot of money because I already have the coilovers.
For a while.
Maybe I'll trade you the coilovers for the 40s you have in there.
Maybe.
We'll
that's
see.
Not, yeah.
I don't know because
the 40s I think are going to go on Samantha.
Not if you put the coilovers on Samantha. No. Which brings to the next thing is I want to run a different tire. I love my IROX, but because I want to keep driving to the trails, the IROX just get worn too quickly and I can't mm-hmm. be buying. I just don't want to keep spending $2,500 on tires
sure.
once a year mm-hmm. because that's how quickly they wear out. They're a really soft tire. So I want to run different tires.
Should run some BFG 35 ATs to the trailhead.
swap
on your 39.5 IROX.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just get right on that. I want to run different tires, which means I need to run a heavier duty tire, which means it's going to be a lot heavier of a tire. I don't want to run a heavier tire on Toyota axles.
Sure.
I've set out to run 3950 40 inch tires on Toyota axles. And I think that that's the limit that you should be running on Toyota axles. They've handled it fairly well, except for our new lamp here in the shop, which apparently that was broken a while before I finished it off. The knuckleball we're talking about, mm-hmm. when I snapped the knuckleball off. But I think my axles, built the way they are, I could get a pretty penny for them. They're in good, great functioning order right now. And so I could sell them and build new axles. And if I build new axles, we're in a unique position with the podcast where, and with Moreflate, that we can essentially help another company push some axles if we do it right. And I really wanted to work with Rough Stuff for the housings and Nitro for all the inners on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned this morning that Rough Stuff is going to be discontinuing their housings.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I haven't gotten a firm date on when is their cutoff.
Okay.
But it's just, they're labor intensive to put together. And labor is very expensive in California here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very low profit margin item for them.
Wow.
So they're going to be discontinuing their housings. And I was like, I really wanted to run those housings because I really wanted to support our buddies over at Rough Stuff.
Right.
But if they're not going to have the housings in the future for us to kind of help push some sales through and help advertise the housings for them, I think I would still like to run their housings, but it kind of defeats the purpose of spending a bunch of money on new axles now.
And cross promotion for me.
So now I'm back kind of in the boat of what housings do I get again? and so I've got to kind of further the discussion with Garrett about when they're going to be discontinuing their housings. But somebody said that for the type of wheeling I do and what I want to do, drive to and from the trails, I need to be getting away from an 8-inch front end. And I'm like, I really like that 8-inch high pinion front end though.
Why?
Because it's a shitty ring gear, and that's their only thing. Is they think that the eight inch ring gear is a really, 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 their words, weak ring and pinion setup.
Okay, but if you're driving to and from the trail, if you're on the trail and you break your ring gear, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to drive to and from the trail, I mean, I don't think it matters. You don't need the front.
Yeah.
I mean, you can unlock your hubs and take it out of four-wheel drive and nothing spins on the inside of the Toyota system.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't, if you're driving, it doesn't matter. But if you're wheeling, I mean, yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But driving to and from the trail, it doesn't matter what size your front ring gear is in the Toyota because you're not using it.
Exactly. So that's half of my argument person.
Where Jeeps are a different story.
Yes, Jeeps are a different story. Everything is spinning in there all the time.
You'd probably have to pull off the hubs and disassemble it so that nothing spins. And I think if you have it in two-wheel drive, it disconnects at the T-case there so that it wouldn't spin anymore. But
yeah, it's either the T-case or down in the diff, kind of like the third-gen 4Runners down there. And the what did we figure out? J-Cruisers.
Who do we need to contact? Who's our resident Jeep guy?
Yeah, or the Gladiator guy. Yeah, so I'm like, I don't buy it. I when you compare, an 8-inch ring gear to a 10.5-inch Sterling ring gear or 14-bolt ring gear, there's a lot of difference there. Or if you compare an 8-inch to a Mega High 9 or something, there's a lot of difference there. But I want to run E-lockers. So I've ran air lockers my whole wheeling career, and there's nothing wrong with them. They work great. But I've been having issues recently with my air lockers and the air lines. I've seen way, way more air lockers, air lines blow and have issues on trails than I've seen with e-locker issues. Now that I think about it, I haven't seen any e-locker issues on trails ever from all my wheeling.
I guess the only e-locker issue kind of you would have is if you ripped the lines.
Yeah. And
or there is a solenoid in there that might get gummed up or whatever, or you could bash it into a rock. I mean, there's obvious ways that could could prevent e-lockers from working, which are similar thing. I mean, there's different scenarios, but there's scenarios where air lockers wouldn't work. But yeah, I think that, I mean, as of in our case, we have seen significantly less issues with e-lockers than we have with air lockers.
Yes. And so that's kind of one of the things I'm like, I want to run e-lockers. I would absolutely love to run a 9-inch platform so that I can get 35 spline shafts. But there's no, and I want to run a dropout third member. I just think maintenance is a lot easier to do on dropout third members. You can just drop the whole third member out and take it and go do maintenance on it. Swap out ring gears, ring and pinions on them. They're a lot easier to mess with carrier bearings, line things, adjust backlashes, etc. I think dropout third members are a lot easier to deal with maintenance on. But there's no e-lockers for 9-inch platforms.
Right. Yep.
And so if I went with a 9-inch platform, I would have to use air. And in my, I think for the style of wheeling that I do, having a front 8-inch with an e-locker over having a Mega High 9 ARB setup with 35-inch shafts, really the main difference there for me, the ring gear is not the big issue. 8-inch high pinions in the front are pretty damn strong because you're pushing on the correct side of the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Low pinions, I'm not a fan of in the front for an 8-inch ring gear. But if you have a high pinion in the front, they're plenty strong.
Yeah.
And you get extra ground clearance out of them.
Correct.
So that's a big concern for me. I love my, you know how much I love my ground clearance. So really it comes down to the difference between an 8-inch high pinion in the front and a 9-inch platform is the 35 spline shafts.
And an e-locker.
And an e-locker, exactly. I mean, you have an air locker or an e-locker.
Right.
And then you have 35 spline shafts or 30 spline shafts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, the 35 spline shafts is better on the 9-inch platform. The e-locker is better, and the ground clearance and the high pinion on the drive side of the gears is better on the Toyota high pinion platform.
Well, you can get a high pinion an 8 on a 9-inch. 9-inch,
true.
So, I mean, you get all that.
That's true.
So you're really the, I mean, you're getting 35 spines or e-lockers.
Yeah, that's really that's what it comes to. And you're, ground clearance.
Well, ground clearance because the pumpkin's larger?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So,
which it's, well, depending on, if you're going with a rough stuff housing.
Yeah, you got an extra plate there on the bottom.
Well, there's, it's the same ground clearance for a 9-inch or an 8-inch.
Gotcha. That, see, I didn't know that. This is why,
because I think they just put the plate, they put whatever, like, oh, they have a 9-inch plate that they put over their housing, or they have an 8-inch plate that they put over their housing.
Gotcha.
It's the same housing external. They just, the way that it fits up and mounts in is a little different.
Gotcha. So the third member mounting is a different plate on the backside.
Yeah. Gotcha. But the pumpkin
and the housing OD is all the same.
Is all the same.
Interesting. See, I didn't know that. That's why
I believe that's true. I don't think they have a different size for an 8-inch and a different size for a 9-inch.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
I don't know why they would do that.
So if I went with a rough stuff housing, that's out of the question then?
The ground clearance issue is out of the question.
So it really comes down to e-lockers versus 35 spline shafts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Well, an inch larger ring gear.
An inch larger ring gear, yeah. Which... The inch larger ring gear is not really that big of a concern to me. I think that comes down to how thick your pinion is and then how thick the ring gear is. That's what I think the stability comes from. The nice thing about the 9-inch platform is there's a load bolt.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like we learned from Curry, load bolts, you know, as soon as there's a little bit of wear on the load bolt, if you don't continually readjust it, it's useless.
Right.
So, so anyways, those are my concerns. With the 9-inch setup, I can run Dana 60 outers, which are pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
But the FJ80 Burfields are plenty strong as well.
Yep.
They can handle 42-inch tires stock without the chromolys on them. So,
well, the Burfield can.
The Burfield, yeah.
You're running the same axle as the mini truck.
True. I'm thinking of, well, the Dana 60 outers are... Are you talking about the stub shaft on the outers? I was thinking of like the knuckles and the steering setup on the
right. But I was saying you can, the outers are beefier than the mini trucks are, but the inner axle on the Toyota platform is the same dimensions.
Correct. Sure. The steering is different.
Yes.
With a Dana setup and a 9-inch setup, your steering is going to be down in front of the axle. Whereas on a Toyota setup, the steering is up out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like, I still think the 8-inch high pinion is going to be the way I'm going to go. But now that rough stuff is not going to have their housings, that changes things a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's my dilemma. The rear, I'm looking at the Land Cruiser 9.5-inch housing, which is all pretty damn similar. It's a 32 spline pinion. I believe the shafts are the same 30-inch shafts, but it's all full float.
Mm-hmm.
So with a full float there, 30 spline is plenty strong as long as I'm not pumping 300-400 horsepower through it and shock loading the system, which I'm really good about not doing. So I don't think I'm going to have,
you know, it's like, I mean, I'm on 37s, but mm-hmm. I'm running stock axle shafts. I've been running stock axle shafts in the back of with my mini truck forever. Mm-hmm. It's not as heavy as your rig is,
mm-hmm.
but I've never broken an axle shaft.
Yeah. And you're semi-float.
And I'm semi-float.
Mm-hmm.
I've spun the splines. I've yeah. bent the splines and noticed it before I reassembled it.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I think Hustle Nuts did, but, and that's as far, that's the most I've ever had. You know, yeah. I've had people ask me, are you running chromoly axle shafts in the rear? And I've said, no, I never have.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw them into Samantha
uh-huh.
because I, you know, worked with Irate 4x4 and got a screaming deal and was able to, you know, use their parts counter.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, why not?
Yeah.
But I've never done it with Bobcat,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so if you're going up, so those axle shafts are plenty strong. As long as you're not, as long as it's not a turning steering axle, I think the axle shafts are plenty strong in those things. And if you're going to the full float status, then it's, you know, I don't know the physics behind it to say that it makes it even stronger, but the issue is if you break it, you can still roll it out.
Yeah. You can that's still, how I see you can it. Still roll it out. And I mean, the whole thing is that you're the weight of the vehicle is no longer on the axle shafts.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Thank you.
For so with semi-float, you still have some of the weight of the vehicle riding on those axle shafts.
Yes.
So as you start bouncing the vehicle, if you're going quick and coming off mm-hmm. drops really mm-hmm. hard, there's a lot of force that gets put on those axle shafts. In full float, you don't get it at all.
Right.
The housing takes all the force right. of it all.
Yeah. Or the spindle.
Or the spindle. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm like, I don't think I'm going to have any issues with the 9.5-inch rear
no.
ring gear out of the Land Cruiser setup. And that's a dropout. You have E-lockers for it, 32 spline pinions, a full float. It should, I don't think I'm gonna have any issues. So really it comes down to the front axle.
Yeah. What third member do you want?
Mm-hmm.
There's the title of the episode.
What third member? Yeah. And then, so yeah, and it's, if I go with a
how big's your third member?
Yeah. If I go with a 9-inch option, then, you know, I've got to get 9-inch gearing,
mm-hmm.
which means I can't run the 9.5-inch rear and I'll probably end up with a 9-inch in the rear as well.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a ratio that you have to be close enough to, mm-hmm. I don't remember what it is offhand, but if you're within like 5% difference of your ratio of front and rear, you're okay. I can't, maybe it's 3%. I can't remember what it was.
Maybe out on the trails. Not on the road. Yes.
On a trail. On, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. But yeah, there might be a ratio there that would allow you to do it for on the trail use with a 9-inch in the front and 9.5 in the rear. But there definitely is if you have an 8 high pinion in the front and a 9.5 in the rear, you can get the same exact gearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if I go with, you know, Dana 60 parts up front on the steering and the outers and run maybe unit bearings and go with a 9-inch Mega High 9 or a Gearworks or something in there.
Don't quote me on this, but I think the Mega High 9 only has one gear ratio option.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure that I Hustle Nuts can clarify because I know he was looking into those or the Gearworks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's only one gear ratio available for the Mega High 9.
Interesting. Okay. I'll have to look into that. Cause now that, I mean, with rough stuff, I had everything kind of set up for the rough stuff housings. Mm-hmm. And, now that that's might be off of the table, I've got to try and figure out if I want to still run their housings or if I want to go to something else and, like a Diamond or a Spider Tracks.
Yep.
Something like that.
Or the trail gear.
Or the trail gear and what kind of innards I want to put on everything.
Yeah.
So far, the only differences that I've heard of that are interesting to me are the 30 spline, 35 spline shafts versus E-lockers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of...
So really, I think what it comes down to you is, do you, are you okay with running air lockers continuously? And if you are die hard on getting your E-locker, then you're not going to run 9 inches.
That's kind of, yeah. If I'm set on the E-locker, then there's no 9-inch options whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Which then brings down
does the 35 spline outweigh your necessity of having E-lockers?
Mm-hmm. So then the other question is, now, budget-wise, would it be better for me to build Dana 60, an 05 Super Duty axle and a 10.5-inch Sterling for Kermit rather than going custom axles?
Dirt Lifestyle Nate just did a video on that, and he showed that it was only a few $100 when in his thing, it was only a few $100 difference to do a custom-built axle housing and setup compared to buying a Super Duty setup. I think we can get some of the parts cheaper than what he said in his video for a Super Duty setup. So it might be advantageous for us to go that route if you choose to. But it's, I think he priced him out and it was like $4,500 for a Super Duty setup and $4,700 for a fabricated housing setup, and with all the guts and everything internal the same, and mounting brackets and everything the same, it was only roughly a $200 difference when he did the math.
I was gonna say, the big difference though is that you have to put in all the labor hours to do the Dana 60 axle.
True. Yeah, you have to set that one up yourself,
because I would have to turn it, cut it up and turn it into a passenger drop, which I think would be a lot of fun to do.
Right.
I just don't have the time to do it. That's the problem. I got to cut all the brackets off, turn it into driver drop or passenger drop, or get a different T case and change my transfer case setup. So it's a driver drop setup. So yeah, that's the other option. But like, do I think I could do that for less money but more time put into it?
Yeah.
Or do I just go with the fabricated housings? I really want the fabricated housings because you can weld anything you want anywhere you want.
That's another thing. Yeah. I think you personally are in the situation of, I don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And so it might be better for you to get a fabricated housing set up and sent to you, just because it might be worth your time. If it, let's just say it is the $200 difference, which it could very not be, you know, for whatever situation you're building or other people are building, but it might be worth your time for $200 to get a fabricated housing sent to you, done.
Yeah.
Compared to fabricating, modifying a housing, putting in the gear sets, making sure it's all correct, welding on the brackets, setting it all up, you know, putting it all together. I mean, that's a lot of time for $200.
It is.
Yeah. And once again, that's if it's the $200 difference.
Because Diamond Axles, you can order their fabricated housing all set up with a custom length on there, set up, ready to go with whatever third members you want, whatever outers you want on them for the steering outers. They'll set it all up for you for like $4,000. And I'm like, that's pretty tempting for the time and effort, but then I don't get the experience of doing it myself, and that's what the most resonates with me, right?
Sure.
So I'm like,
okay,
what the fuck do I do, Jimmy?
You stick with leaf springs, get new axles, and sell me your coilovers.
Done. Let's do it.
All right. And I keep my 40s.
No, I need those. Yeah. So,
what do you out there in this world of podcast listeners think that Tyler should do? Do you think he should stick with Kermit the way it is currently, get new axles? What axles should he go with? Should he get new axles and link it front and rear, front only, rear only? How do you think it would be set up?
It would be front only on the links, because doing the rear, I have to relocate the gas tank.
Yeah. Or three link it.
No, the links would still be in the way on a three link.
Really?
The gas tank. Yep. I would have to, if I did anything, it would have to be a trailing arm with a panned hard bar,
which is
kind of,
that's a lot of work.
It's not really a lot of work. It just wouldn't handle well on the road.
Yeah.
you really need to have some kind of triangulation in there. Mm-hmm. And you just, I can't triangulate anything with the gas tank right there.
Sure. Okay. So what do you want Tyler to do? Do you want him to keep Kermit as is? Should he get just new axles? What axles should he be looking at? What third members should he be getting? Link the front end axles, just link the front with Toyota axles. You know, there's a lot of options here. We're curious what you guys thought or think. We covered a lot of it today, so hopefully we might have swayed some people to think one way, or people are screaming and yelling at us and are going to write us nasty emails. I hope that's true. We'll find out. You can reach us, Jimmy or Tyler, at snailtrail4x4.com. Tyler's over on Instagram, 4x4 Toyota Tyler. I'm over on Instagram, snailtrail4x4. And if you're a patron, you can always message us there or on the Facebook group.
Sounds good. I like it. You can also call us at what phone number, Jimmy?
916-345-7444.
There you go.
4744.
Yep. And you can APRS text us on that as well.
Yeah, you can.
So awesome, man. Yeah, I'm open to ideas. I think my mind is set up already, but I put the order together with Nitro. That's why I'm asking this.
Okay.
The order is all set with Nitro because we're still waiting on Corey's third member. So yes. I'm like, if I want to do this project over winter, I need to order now so that my third member is here in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I already have the order set up with Nitro. All I need to do is give him my credit card. So I'm kind of like, I'm pretty sure I know where I'm going with it, but I want to hear more ideas to make sure that that's where I want to go.
Sure.
Maybe somebody's going to come up with something that is like, oh, I didn't think about that. So that's what I want to hear from people for my midlife crisis here.
Sounds good.
Cool. So let us know. You guys know how to get in contact with us. Jimmy, do you have any final words for everybody?
Sass the Ford and let's wheel that.
Ooh, and with that, my friends, keep crawling.
I got one for you.
Okay. Ready.
What did the big flower say to the tiny flower?
Nice pistol you got there.
Hey there, bud.
Hey there, bud. Okay.
Bud.
Yeah. Isn't a bud like a non-flowered flower?
Yeah. Baby flower.
It's not a baby. Oh, I tiny guess a flower. Baby. Yeah.
Pre-flower.
I think we need a ruling from Marlene.
Should it be? Hey there, fetus.
There we go.